I want to talk about music because it's Raglan Music. Well, it's New Zealand Music Month, but I'm calling it Raglan Music Month here on the morning show. Every second song I play on average is a Raglan track, and we're doing the ultimate Raglan playlist. And last week I started doing I called it the Raglan Music History, but it was all based on recorded Raglan music that I could get my hands on. So we only went back as far as the 80s, basically. So I said to John yesterday, what have you got? What can we find out? What was happening music-wise in our community prior to the 80s? And we're talking about our source is old newspapers, isn't it, John? So we're talking about...
It's old newspapers and old books. So as I mentioned a while ago, the Old Settlers Association was set up in the early 1920s when they realised that lots of the old settlers were dying off. And they then started compiling various histories of Raglan.
Okay.
I think the latest version was done in the 1980s by Bob Vernon.
Okay. So his
books are available at the bookshop and at the information office, I think.
Yeah. So what we're going to talk about today is based on those records. This time next week, I'll be talking to Ngaruno Renata about, and we might be doing some music from earlier. And I don't know. I have no idea what she's bringing at this point in time. But yeah,
yeah. Well, there are quite a lot of Maori musical instruments that have been discovered or still exist. So
yeah, and she actually knows quite a bit about them as well. Uh-huh. So yeah, so we might have a little bit of that. But for now, chapter 44, John, Raglan's bands. What have we got here?
Well, this is chapter 44 of one of Bob Vernon's books. So he's got chapters on all sorts of things, and one of the chapters he's got is about Raglan bands, and he says the first reference that he could find was in James Latrobe's diary in 1889, saying that we were serenaded by the Tin Can Band, the leader of which was Charlie Donaldson. So that was apparently the first reference to a band, but then they seemed to become more prolific in the 1920s.
John, do you think that it actually was a band that used tin cans, or that was just a jokey name?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Okay.
I'm not aware of any evidence either way.
All right.
And certainly people enjoyed playing practical jokes and making jokey references and things like that, so I think it might well have been a joke. But
yeah, yeah. But
there was also a shortage of materials at that time, but people were already importing pianos and such like. So, and the stories of pianos being carried to a wool shed and things like that, so that they could have a dance in the wool shed.
Right. Okay. So that's how they did it. So what were you moving on to?
Well, in the 1920s, they seemed to start having bands quite seriously. So there was a report in 1940 of 52 years' service as a bandsman was marked by Mr. Salmon as the bandmaster in Whangarei Municipal Band, and he had been in Raglan as part of that 52 years' service as a bandsman, and before that he'd been in Hamilton. So he was one of the main people who was interested in bands. But there were quite a few bands which came up. I'm not sure whether they were in competition with each other or whether they were complementary or whether they were rather like the existing music groups. They sort of just had various groups of fans and various genres of music.
We don't know. I just mentioned that you talk about Mr. Salmon, Mr. H. Salmon. He did start... Where's this? Established a brass band there in Raglan, yeah. So he did establish a brass band here. But are you talking about? I know there was a bit of a rivalry for some bands. They call them the Citizens Band, and there became two. I read through this yesterday. Then there was the story. Basically, goes that there was like a split in the band, and they formed two bands. And there was quite a fierce rivalry with. And if you're in town, you only went to one of the bands and not to the other. As a fan and all that sort of thing going on. Eventually somebody brokered a peace deal. They went, they became one band again. And then by the sounds of it, everybody lost interest once the rivalry was over. And the bands, neither band or the main lasting band were heard from ever again.
You know, this was the story that about 1950 there was the Raglan District Brass Band.
Right.
And then Bob Vernon said all went well until some little or big difference split the band into two.
There we
then
go.
We had two bands, the Raglan Brass and the Citizens Band, both working well and practicing loud and long, but not together.
And there were also two groups of parents, aunts and uncles, all working hard to raise funds to buy instruments and uniforms.
Yep, because before we had television and before we had tape music and things like that, there was an awful lot of live performance of people with mostly violins, but also with piano and various other instruments, even a barrel organ at one stage. So accordions were popular.
We don't seem
to hear accordions very much these days. But
I think that because they were quite mobile, you could pick them up and go and make a fair amount of noise with them. But one thing I remember, this is nothing to do with Raglan, but my mother's family, when she was young, they used to play music in the evening together. So I think there was an awful lot of that used to happen. Of course, that won't be recorded much. We're talking about the kind of formal bands that were put together. But I guess what I was talking about was kind of folk music. People just would play and play some old standards.
It seems to have been a whole variety of music. So, and occasionally they listed all the songs that were being sung, and hardly any of them I recognise today. And even when I search for some of them on the internet, I can't find them. So they've been well and truly forgotten, I think.
Right.
But maybe we ought to have the cheerful news about the band splitting up, because they did get together again in 1954 when Frank Chibnall, chairman of the Raglan Brass Band, handed a letter to Bert Andrews, president of the Citizens Band, suggesting that the combined committees meet amicably and without reference to past differences.
And this under the chairmanship of Councillor Hartstone. Yep. And so the meeting was successfully held. The two bands combined and called the new organisation the Raglan Silver Band. So that's the good news. And then it says, they all relaxed after so much effort. The new band quickly faded out and has not been heard of since. If we were talking about people arguing on Facebook before, and obviously Facebook wasn't required for arguments necessarily in the past.
Yeah, well, there was also a court case. So this was back in the 1880s. In 1880, Powell and Master, the church wardens of the local Anglican church, engaged Edward Callon to play the harmonium each Sunday at the local service and to organise and train the choir. Having held two practices each week, the remuneration was to be 2 guineas a quarter. But as there were insufficient pupils in Raglan, he also taught in Hamilton and was therefore not always available to have choir practice in Raglan or play at Sunday services. And so the church warden wrote to him and said, "Sir, from your frequent absence from church service and singing practice, it's very clear your numerous duties prevent you carrying out the engagement, and your services will no longer be required." And then a court case followed on from that, and there was a question as to who ought to pay the costs, whether it should be the church or the church warden. There have been disputes going on over music ever since.
Hey, I want to go back to the story about the Raglan Silver Band, which faded out. The assets were sold and the money banked to help finance some future band. The trustees were Eric Petchel, Brian Banks and Fred Litchwark. However, after many years without any new band coming on the scene, it was decided to pass the money on to the Raglan Community Services so it could be used for the good of Raglan. That must have been a young Fred Litchwark then?
Yes.
So we don't really know what year that is, but I'm going to say 60s or 70s?
These books probably that 70s. Bob Vernon wrote were written in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
So I forgot what date the Raglan book was written, but I think it was one of the later ones. I think it was around about 1983 or so.
Right. Are we due for another write-up, John, do you think?
Well, I know the museum's looking at a timeline of Raglan, but I'm not sure that they're going to go beyond that. So looking at all the significant events that are known about Raglan and just putting them down as a list because very often it gets quite confusing when you jump from one subject to another and different dates to another. So,
like we're doing here.
Yes. So I think they're thinking that having a timeline that goes from prehistory to the modern day would be quite interesting.
I guess, like current times, there's enough, like we've got the Chronicle and now even the radio is leaving a written record. So there's probably going to, and then there's the whole internet. I mean, there's going to be too much information. And probably the trouble in 100 years' time trying to work out actually where what actually happened in amongst all the Facebook posts is probably going to be the challenge for historians.
That's always been a problem for historians because sometimes there isn't enough information, but very often you hear of things being discovered and they've only been discovered because somebody has worked their way through some massive paper archive.
Right.
And they've found something that's interesting and revealed it to everybody else. But it's always been there. It's a matter of finding it. And yeah, I think there's still going to be that problem. But there's the added problem now that lots of the information we've got is on electronic devices. And they keep changing every 5 years or so. So
yeah.
And if I think you've ever tried to read any of your old emails or anything, you might well have found it difficult or even to find them.
Yeah. And I think that's that why they set up the archive.org was an attempt to try to keep a permanent record.
Yes,
but that's an impossibility in a lot of ways. We've got, you know, I mean, no one's going to keep a permanent record of Facebook, are they, or are they?
Well, Facebook seems to, so you can go back to the things you've written in the past on Facebook if you know where to find them, if you've kept a note of what they URL was, and then you can actually look it up and it's still there. So I don't know whether they're going to do that indefinitely or...
You're describing something that nobody does though, pretty much, John.
Well, I do.
Well, okay, but you're the exception. This is why I bring you in for interviews, because you know the information, but most people don't have that kind of, your kind of mind where you keep a good record of what's going on.
Because when you find something, it's useful to keep a note of where it came from, so that if somebody says, "Where did you get that from?" you can say,
"Yeah, yeah." There's a lot of stuff, and I do it too online. I'm like, "I heard this somewhere," so don't take it as gospel. But, and then I type it in. So yeah. All right, let's get back to the music. The Raglan Caledonian Highland Pipe Band, Tom and Betty White, in 1947, they had. Tom and Betty White were the. They must have been the organizers. And they had a small but enthusiastic beginning in 1947. Oh, the originator and first chairman was James Ferguson. So, John, why does this chapter quote Tom and Betty White? Is it literally quoting them? Is that their memories?
One of the things that Bob Vernon did when he was writing his books was to get people who he thought were experts on particular topics to write chapters for him.
Okay.
So throughout his books, you'll find that he's got various people writing chapters and... Yeah, Tom and Betty White were amongst them.
Okay.
And the White family had been in Raglan for at least a century. I'm not sure how much longer.
Okay.
And like most Raglan families, they're related to all the other Raglan families. So you could say their roots go right back to the beginning of settlement, even before.
Okay. So the original band consisted of pipers only. They were John White, Tom White, Reed McKinnon, Hugh and Trevor Lumsden. And they had tutors. Oh, there was a tutor, Russell McFarlane of Narrawahia, and Sam Collier of Hamilton. So that was the pipe band, was about five people to start with.
Yeah, it's always hard to know how big these bands, or they sometimes even call them orchestras, were. An orchestra, you usually think of 50 or 60 people, but some of these talk about just having brothers as an orchestra, like the Gilmore brothers who did the postcards and ran the main store in Raglan.
Yeah.
And they had an orchestra. Which I've not checked how many brothers there were, but can't have been 60. So,
1947, what was the population of the town in 1947, approximately? We're talking about 1,000 people. Are we up to 1,000 by then?
We were rather less than that, from what
I recall. Less than that. So, yeah, I'm just getting to the point of having any kind of large band would be very hard. Probably more people living rurally, denser rurally the population, but still not a lot of people out here to form orchestras with.
Yeah, probably the main difference was we didn't have television, so people didn't sit and watch TV or Netflix or whatever.
So a lot more people were probably musical.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And also going out and meeting people, because apart from a rather crackly radio that was your only link with the outside world. But talking of radio, there were a few radio pioneers in Raglan as well. But
yeah, well, do we get to that a bit later?
Yep, okay.
All right, because that was kind of interesting. So they're just talking about who was and where and who. And so they bought uniforms. They always had to have uniforms, these bands, by the looks of it. So they got uniforms and...
And they closed the aerodrome because there were occasions when field days were held on the Raglan Aerodrome with visiting bands from other districts. The Raglan band sometimes travelled to outside competitions and field days as well.
And they returned with the odd trophy or medal as well. Well done, Raglan.
And since 1947, many members have passed through our ranks as pipers or drummers.
Has it continued? Because we see a Highland band at various things in Raglan to this day, I think.
Yes.
Has it continued non-stop since then, do you know, John?
As far as I can make out, there are some records of it in the museum, and maybe someday somebody will go through those and write a history of the band.
Okay.
But I don't know the detail of it.
Okay. There were also dance bands, Chapter 46, dance bands. Many of the settlers could play dance music on the piano. Mrs. Hurd on the piano used to play for many dances. So that was just the dance would be just with a piano.
Yes. Well, there were various instruments used. Say, accordions were quite popular at dances and violins.
Okay. Yep. The first dance band that this person can remember, or dance band or orchestra, they could remember was about 1922 with Gordon Dent on the piano, Tom Corns with the cornet, Mr. and Mrs. J.M. Thompson with violins, Gladys Thompson. I'm not sure if she played the violin or piano. So there you go.
Yeah, but then you look through the old newspaper records and there are constant references to dances for various excuses and that mentioning who the music was provided for. So usually they list two or three or four people who were providing music at the dances.
Okay, so I just... Lots of names. I see that Frank Vernon, who must be a... Bob Vernon must be his descendant. Tom Park on the saxophone, Tom Redwoods, drums, Gilmore Twins, we mentioned them before, Ian on the piano and Neville on a saxophone, Brian Banks on the sax and Jack Johnson on the drums. Do you think people listening know these names? Lloyd Stenbeck on the piano?
Well, some of these families are still in Raglan, so some of those names will be familiar to people and others have moved away or were only in Raglan for a relatively short time.
We've got Hubert Fuller with his trumpet and then Clary Cresswell, this name I do know, provided very good dance music either on the piano or with his sax because we've got him listed in our Ultimate Raglan playlist on YouTube playing at a telethon. That's the only recording that we've got of him with a very young Dave Mabey backing him on guitar. So, yeah, that's the first name that I recognise actually as being someone who kind of crosses over into an era where I was alive. Lots and lots of people listed. I don't think we're going to keep listing all of them. Tomato Dancers, very popular in the 60s.
Yep. Well, I think the dances were popular throughout until television came along, and that seems to have killed off the dances. Mm. We still have an occasional ball or something, but they're far less frequent because they seem to be every week or two in the old days, according to newspaper reports. But,
well, we still have, like, the Yacht Club is on every weekend. Like, it's not strictly a dance, although people dance, but it is...
it's music, yeah.
It's music, it's live music. It's just very different.
Yeah, maybe people didn't really want to dance, they just wanted the music.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I imagine the dancers... I don't know, who came to those dances, John? Do we know? Was it just the young people?
Well, it seems to have been people from all over the place, because they very often talk about the weather and say the attendance was low because the weather was poor. Or the attendance was high because it was a fine moonlit night.
But they don't say whether people our age were coming to the dances?
I don't recall that they ever said that there were any particular age groups. Mm. So my guess is that it was quite a mix of ages that were coming to the dances because that was the only entertainment that was on, basically.
Yeah, true. They talk about going to pictures. They've moved through to some more modern bands like Midge Marsden, Cornerstone Roots, Bullfrog Rata, or Midge with Bullfrog Rata. So that got modern. Then they say, we went to pictures in the old wooden town hall. and this is a really interesting statement, it was true apartheid then. Maori sat on one side and Pākehā on the other. There were silent pictures run by Stay Fuller while Mrs. Heard played the piano throughout the film.
Yeah, because I did an interview with Nev Meeking, who ran the cinema at one time, and he recalled those days when the races were divided on opposite sides of the cinema. So,
was someone making sure that happened, or that's just how people went?
I don't know. I've not found out from him. I've got the impression it was just how people went rather than anything that was enforced.
Right.
The only thing that was enforced seemed to be no smoking, as it was in most cinemas, because there was a risk of the film catching fire. And also you couldn't see too much if there was a cloud of smoke in front of you.
Yeah, it wasn't good. The further back you were, the worse value for money it was. What else? The dances arranged quickly and without much trouble were a regular feature in the old hall. Yeah, talking more about that. Here we go, getting into the radio bit. Who is this we're hearing from here? Whose memories are these, John?
Well, they're from all over the place. So.
Okay, all right.
Mostly the families involved, I think, either had the memories or kept records of these things.
Okay.
And they've either found their way into a history book or into a mention in one of the newspapers or... and then one of the sources that I found here was when the Harbourview Hotel was listed as a historic building, they delved through some of the things which were in their records, and they said that about the Harbourview Hotel, for the last 40 years, the hotel's had a reputation of providing good live musical entertainment, so the 40 years would be going back to the 1960s. They say that in 1979, the management received complaints about the noise level from music in the beer garden at the rear.
Uh-huh.
And in Easter 1978, the Roman Catholic priest had to stop his church service because he couldn't make himself heard.
Really? So that is that the same place where the Catholic Church is now on James Street?
Different church, but same place, yes.
I suspect he could hear them and was frustrated by being able to hear them. I'm sure it wasn't so loud that he couldn't talk inside the church. Okay, can I talk about the radio, John?
Yeah, sure.
So this person's saying, I remember about 1925 when George Anker of Hamilton bought a radio, we called it a wireless back then, to the Raglan Theatre one Saturday night. George demonstrated it during the interval and after the show, and it was to advertise his wireless sets. And it certainly filled the hall with patrons that night. The large horn speaker emitted some music with lots of static and other weird noises. We thought it was marvellous, but were pleased when halftime ended and we could get on with the real good Tom Mix show.
Yep, and there was also a mention of Jim Pooley as well, who Bob Vernon said could do many things and went into any new project with great enthusiasm. He'd been a church organist before coming to Raglan and also had a good singing voice. When radio was in its infancy, he built a receiver and transmitter, which operated from his home on the slopes of Kerrioy. So he lived up at almost up at Wainui Road, what used to be Pooley's Road, but which has been closed for quite a while.
Okay.
He used his God-given talents to entertain with song and music. Those fortunate enough to have a radio, or a wireless, as we called it in those days. So
that's actually the first radio broadcast in this area.
Sounds like it, yes.
So when is that? We should put this into our history for the station. We're 20s, I guess. 20s or 30s?
Well, there was also a radio mast up on the beaches land up on Wainui Road.
Beach family, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be called Beach Road, which confused some people who went up it to find the beach. You don't usually go up a hill to find a beach, but
they tried.
Some people did.
Yeah. So this guy, Jim Pooley. Someone else. So Bert Williams, who worked for Bob Cowley, became interested and helped Jim in the radio project, and he went on. Bert went on to later manage the Te Puke radio station.
Yep.
I guess there weren't a lot of restrictions on radio back then. He didn't need a license.
As far as I know, there weren't any restrictions. I don't know when they came in, actually. Must have been some licensing at some stage.
Yeah, it would have been when they started broadcasting over the top of each other. I imagine that would have been used as the reason to bring in licenses.
Which is presumably when you got higher powered transmitters, because presumably these were quite low powered.
Yeah, I couldn't say.
And they would have been operating with valves and things like that. And in fact, initially, they probably needed to have their own generators because Raglan didn't get mains electricity until the mid-30s.
Really? So, yes. So people had...
So this building was originally lit with a diesel generator.
So how many people had... I guess if you didn't have electric lights, you just had candles, hence all the fires that used to happen.
Well, there were also quite good oil lamps by then, so... I don't know if you used an oil lamp, one of those things that you pump up to increase the pressure, and you have a mantle on it that keeps falling apart and you have to keep replacing.
I've seen them like in camping scenarios. It's basically what happens. So they probably use less and less now because LED lamps last so long. Okay, are we getting sidetracked again? Are we going back into the music, John?
Yep. Well, there's quite a lot that's been written about music.
Choirs at the church here. In 1880, Powell and Master, church wardens of the local Anglican church, engaged Edward Callan to play the harmonium each Sunday at the local service and to organise and train the choir. Two practices a week. Thanks, folks. What's a harmonium, please, John?
Not sure.
You don't know either.
Sort of organ, I think. Cross between an organ and a piano, as far as I know.
But. Okay, I'm going to find myself a picture. I'm not going to be able to show anyone, of course, but...
whilst you're doing that, maybe I can mention something that attracted my attention, which was that in 1938, December celebrations at that time included a Dixon's loudspeaker service to provide music every day and night for a week. So that was the first probably public broadcasting in Raglan. I don't know how that disrupted the church service, but
so that would have been those generators back then. They wouldn't have been as quiet as modern generators.
Well, presumably it was playing gramophone records, because the next year, which was the beginning of the war, but December 1939, the visitor arriving in the evening will be charmed with the fairyland atmosphere created by dozens of coloured electric lights placed at intervals across the main street. The effect can be better imagined if a glance is taken at the picture which accompanied the newspaper report, which is on the Papers Pass website if you're interested in looking for it. But the picture is an aerial view of the main Bow Street, and so the Bow Street must have had rows of electric lights on it. And they went on to say then that apparently it changed from Dixon's loudspeaker service to Graham's address service. Will provide music every day and night for a week. And then they were also talking about the carnival regatta, including Scottish dancing. So there must have been a Highland band at that time, I think, providing the Scottish dancing.
Well, look at this, the carnival regatta, including Scottish dancing, speedboat racing, children's sport, and band music will take up New Year's Day. A gay ball will be held in the town hall in the evening.
Yeah, you might avoid that word these days.
I know it's a
wrong impression.
It's a very different usage of the word. Yeah, but that would have been a big day, that New Year's Day in Raglan, by the sound of that.
But the was a carnival in Raglan right up until the 1950s, and then again there was one of these arguments over. I think it was over where the money should go that was raised by the carnival. Because the council decided to take it and spend it on the sewage at the campground.
Oh, really?
And I think some of the people who'd raised it didn't feel that the council ought to be taking their money and using it for sewage works at the campground.
No, the council wouldn't do that these days. They couldn't do that these days.
They're taking our ratepayer money and spending it on the airfields.
Well, they do it, yeah, but there's, I mean...
But that's not money that's been raised by another organisation. Yeah.
Yeah, with a community event. It's like taking money raised at Maui Dolphin Day and using it for the sewers or the roads. I found out what a harmonium is. It's also called a reed organ. It produces a sound when wind sent by foot-operated bellows through a pressure-equalising air reservoir causes metal reeds screwed over slots and metal frames to vibrate.
Yeah,
it's a pump organ.
Between an organ and a piano.
So you pump with your feet, folks. So, oh yeah, so that you are the, you are, not only are you the music, but you're the energy force as well.
So, yeah, and it's, there's presumably an awful lot more that is in history about music, because it does keep cropping up in almost every newspaper report, saying that there was a dance and the music was provided by various people. Most of the groups don't seem to have stayed together all that long, so you see them existing for a year or two at the most and then disappear again.
That's, I think that's part of being a small community. It takes so much energy to keep things like that going, and there's so few people to do it. Like, that feels like this is still the same in our town now, with various things. Hey, can I read this paragraph? Oh, go ahead, John.
Yeah. No, you've probably got more interesting thing you found.
Okay, so 5th of July 1921, the football match Raglan versus Carfia resulted Carfia 9, Raglan 3. In the evening, the visitors were entertained at a dance in the town hall, which was crowded, music being supplied by the newly formed Raglan Orchestral Society. So when they say football, I'm presuming they're meaning rugby.
Usually they mean rugby, unless they call it soccer, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So Carfia 1, I think we beat them now. They don't have a rugby team anymore in Carfia. Must be a long time since they had one. I remember we did a history chat on sport once, and you dug up all the sports stuff, and the rugby was, it seemed to be something, one of the reasons it seemed to take off in New Zealand was because it was easy to play rugby on the farm. You didn't need to have a proper smooth field. You could just get a bunch of guys together, and a rugby ball was the only equipment you needed, and off you went. So that seemed to be one of the reasons it was so popular back in those times.
Okay. We learn more history every day.
That's one thing. You do most of the remembering around here, John, but that is something that I remember about it.
And one of the other semi-irrelevant facts that I know about that is that rugby apparently was a Viking settlement originally, which is why it's got the BY on the end, which is the name that Saxons, Vikings rather, gave to most of their settlements on the eastern side of England, including rugby.
That is fantastically obscure, John. Thank you.
Hey, a link with the Vikings.
Yes, that rugby came from the Vikings. We'll just say it like that. We have reached time to wrap up the show. Thank you for coming in. John, are you on the air tonight?
Yes. I haven't decided what I'm doing yet, but
okay.
I will plan before 6 o'clock.
All right. So, yeah, 6 p.m. John's show is on. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. And, yeah, thanks for coming in.